Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Ray Hager and I speak with Assemblywoman Jill Tolles, then Elisa Cafferata with Planned Parenthood. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
After the elimination of solar net metering in 2015, more than 2,000 workers were forced to find solar installation jobs in other states. Now, we have a chance to help put Nevadans back to work. Assembly Bill 405 would send a signal that Nevada is open for business. Don't let the clock run out on solar jobs. Visit yeson405.com. Paid for by the Alliance for Solar Choice.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're delighted to welcome back to the program Assemblywoman Jill Tolles. Pleasure to have you back on the program.
Thank you, Sam. It's great to be back.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about was that the governor has got extra money, and he wants to put it towards education. And there's been discussion about some kind of weighted formula.
Right.
Because, for example, the Washoe County School District, unbeknownst to most of us, but apparently not to management, was around $40 million in the hole going into the next budget year and looking at deficits beyond that, despite the fact that they had raised up a lot of money for building new schools, but that money cannot be used for the current situation. What are your thoughts on that in terms of the legislature appropriating money towards the Washoe County School District?
Well, I think they've got that number down to 10 million. So from 40 million down to 10 million with some administrative cuts. But I think there's definitely some questions about what more they could do, perhaps, on that 10 million. Of course, we're making the decisions for statewide. So as we're looking at overall education funding and where the needs are, one of the things that I've heard from constituents is concern over, just where the funding goes towards your everyday average student in those seats, and how is that money being allocated. We've done a lot of good stuff with categorical funding with the Zoom schools, ELL, special education, and so forth. And that's been nice because it's been siloed off, makes it easier to be accountable for us to look in the future and say, okay, how are those programs working? They're not subject to collective bargaining and what have you. But one of the areas where perhaps that weighted funding formula can be part of the discussion is where does the rest of that money go towards, just every student in every seat and what their needs are today. Because we're, still below the national average in terms of how we're funding. And when we fund education, and we do that with the accountability in place, with that transparency in place, that ends up reaping benefits down the road and across the board. So I think it's going to be an important part of the discussion. Those are going to be all those budget discussions at the very end of session,
which we're coming up on within 3 weeks here.
Right.
You attended as a volunteer lobbyist on education issues for the last few sessions.
Mm-hmm.
How has that helped you from going from the lobbying side to being an assemblywoman?
Well, it definitely gives me, I think, a depth of understanding that has been useful in the committee hearings, being able to ask the questions about, you know, exactly what is it that we're prioritizing and what are the areas where there's the greatest return on investment, because that's really, in many ways, it is how we need to look at it. This is an investment. It's an investment in our future. And are we doing that wisely? Are we getting that return? Are we putting money into the programs that have proven track record across the United States and also are going to directly prepare our students to enter the workforce? I think one of the most exciting things about the Education Committee this session has been how much we're focusing on career and technical education, things like dual enrollment that we just passed out of our House and out of committee and out of our House, other aspects that, STEM education and STEAM education, motivating students to pursue those careers because those are where the jobs are, and we need to fill those jobs with Nevadans.
You know, I want to get back to this $40 million deficit of the Washoe County School District. You said it, that recently they've cut it to 10.
Right.
Okay, in 2 months, they've cut it from $40 million. Then they told us last month that they cut it to $25 million, and now you're saying they cut it to 10. So that's $30 million that they've cut out of this deficit in just a couple of months, 2 to 3 months. So do you really think that there really was a $40 million deficit? Or do you think that they were maybe just saying that maybe to get some concern going before the legislature?
Well,
I can't believe that they've cut $30 million off of it in 2 months.
Yeah, I can't speak for them and what their strategy was, if there was a strategy at all, but I will say it definitely raised concern. I could speak to the impact.
Yeah,
there was a tremendous amount of concern, and rightfully so. And in fact, I heard from a lot of constituents that were very upset that they heard about this and felt surprised by it. And so I think that the school district was right to address that, not by doubling down and asking for more, but by looking at where they could cut. And I think that, they're going to continue to need to take a look at their budgets, take a look at their contracts, take a look at what they're doing and make sure that it is that transparent model that the voters, constituents, parents are demanding and need.
Can they resolve this problem ongoing? Because when we talked to the chief financial officer, he said that this is a continuing problem, that they're looking at deficits for several years going forward.
Yeah, I think that you got to get into that with them. But I do think that some of the scenario was that we were in a great recession, and so they used up a lot of their rainy day funds, and that's where they are now. But as you pointed out, their operating budget is separate from their capital budget, which is what I've spent a good majority of my time focusing on. And that is, as we've said in past shows, that has 100% transparency. You've got basically an online real-time checkbook where you can see exactly how much money was spent on windows at the elementary school in your neighborhood last week. And I think we need that same, we need to move towards more of that same transparency on the operating side as well. And I think that would help answer a lot of those questions and certainly give taxpayers and parents and the community a better sense of feeling like they're a part of that discussion of how is this money being spent and where is that going to and what are the results in our student performance.
All right, let's take a break. More with Assemblywoman Jill Tolles when we come back.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance, custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada, and we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Assemblywoman Jill Tolles.
Jill, last month we had an interview with the Deputy Superintendent McNeil from the Washoe County School District, and she said part of the deficit problem that the school district is facing is because of unfunded mandates from the legislature. Now, I wanted to ask you about what do you think of that remark, since all of your district is in Washoe County, if right. I'm not mistaken. So are you guys at the legislature throwing more burden on the school district with unfunded mandates?
Well, we certainly highlight it whenever that comes up. If there's a proposal that has an unfunded mandate, that's something that we typically will ask about and take into consideration as to whether or not we can pass it. And so I'm very conscious of that. In fact, I didn't get to this bill this session, but one of my ideas on my list was to take a look at doing an audit of all the unfunded mandates and just across the board, and particularly in regards to education, and seeing what could be redlined out. I mean, I would call it the declutter the closet bill. I think that
that's a good idea.
I think that we need to have that discussion. I think that's going to take an interim to really dive into and take a look at what are some of the unfunded mandates that were passed, you know, years before I was ever even involved in this process, and are they relevant today? What good have they done, if anything? If they haven't, let's scrap that. We need to streamline some things for sure, and it gets complex when we start talking about education funding, because you have the local funding, you have the statewide funding, and then you have the federal funding. And what a lot of people don't realize is how much those federal grants are tied with administrative positions that are there to help monitor, to make sure, implement them, to report back on them, and so forth. And so I think just an overall audit of where those monies are coming from in each of those categories, what administrative functions are attached to them, are we really getting that return on investment as taxpayers, and then how do we declutter it so that we can streamline, focus on what those priorities are? What's going to prepare our students to get out of our schools, to get ready for society and ready for entering the workplace? And that's the conversation that we need to keep at the forefront. And that's, I'm proud to say, at least in our education committee, that has been the majority of the focus. Like I said in the last segment, workforce development, dual credits, you know, STEAM and STEM education, career and technical education, just even engaging students in their career counseling at much younger ages, starting at ninth grade. Some would argue we should even start it at seventh and eighth grade. How do we cast this vision for these students that this education is going somewhere? It's going to a job. It's going to contributing to society as a whole. And that's the model we need to be focusing on.
Are you getting support from the university system in terms of workforce development? Because, you know, right now the cost of going to a university can be so incredibly expensive. I remember when he was Congressman Joe Heck on the program saying he was still paying for his, you know, medical education.
Right.
But there are great careers that are so needed in this state with all the construction that we're going to have going on at both ends of the state and even in rural Nevada. Is it getting the support, do you think, from the universities?
Well, I think when we look at particularly higher ed, we look at it as, you know, a highway with on-ramps and off-ramps. And the exciting thing is there's levels for each type of career that the students want to enter into. So we've got some apprenticeship programs that are excellent training, and even down into the high school level, right? I think I've talked about ACE Charter School before. I was amazed how you can get out of there with some credits at TMCC, a year worth of credits at TMCC, and a certificate in diesel technology or diesel maintenance, that you could be making $60,000 to $100,000 a year right out of high school, right? So, and there's apprenticeship programs in that same way that you can gain skills and be in the workforce immediately. Then you've got the community colleges that have proven to be extremely nimble and be able to work with industry and respond by customizing certain degree programs or course loads that work towards a job within 12 months or 18 months, and that's exciting. And then at the higher ed level, there's times where we need that higher ed degree where it's, you know, leads into engineering fields and the medical field, as you just mentioned. And so as far as each of those, I think having scalable degrees or scalable programs for each industry that we need to prepare our workforce for is critical. I would still argue that our university system in Nevada is much more affordable. If you look across the United States, we need to recognize that you can get an amazing education, UNR, especially a tier one university, and continuing to raise in its standing and national recognition. UNLV has some tremendous programs, and now with the new medical school being built, there's opportunities right here in Nevada that you don't have to pay that outrageous tuition that you would pay in California or other states. We've got it right here, homegrown here in Nevada.
Okay, so let's talk about what is shaping up to be the big battle at the end of the session, which is the ESAs.
Right.
Where do you stand on this?
Listen, I'm really thankful if that's our biggest battle this session. I think that we're in good shape. You know, obviously, you know, I'm a big supporter of public education, but the ESAs have emerged as something that the people have really asked for. A good portion of our population are very, very interested in more options for school choice for their children. And to be quite honest, I think... when you really break down this issue, it's a very workable solution. If you look at our population that were enrolled in schools last year, there's 456,520 students, okay? And you take the 25 million that's allocated, that's additional. It's not taking away from the distributive school accounts. It's, you know, thanks to that Supreme Court ruling, it's additional funding. It's a separate funding model for ESAs. If you have every student take advantage of that within that 25 million and then 35 million the next year, that's less than 1% of our student population. And yet the response to this is almost as if we're seeing 20% of our students fleeing from public schools or 50%, and this is going to cripple our public schools. We're talking about less than 1% of students that would probably take advantage of this program. And when you hear these stories of families where a student's been bullied and they just need to hit the reset button, they just need a new environment, or because there's a great program that's not available at their school that's available at a private school, and this gives them the opportunity to take advantage of that, Let's make a space for those families that it could really make all the difference in the world for that child's life without hurting public education.
And that's where we have to leave it. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always pleased to welcome back to the program Elisa Cafferata. She's a lobbyist with Planned Parenthood. Happy to have you back on the program.
Thanks.
The big topic over the last few days has been the defunding of Planned Parenthood. Where does Nevada sit in all of this?
So first, just to make sure folks know, with the vote for the so-called American Health Care Act, which is the Republican version, Trump Care, the repeal and replace version, part of that included a provision to defund Planned Parenthood. And what that means is it's not like we have a line item in the federal budget that you can eliminate. What it means is that Planned Parenthood, which is a health, which has health centers all over the country, can no longer bill Medicaid and Title X family planning grant programs, which is what we do, just like every other health center around the country. So that's what it means.
Okay, but we know that the vote in the House is essentially meaningless. The Senate has said that they're going to completely rewrite this thing from the ground up, mm-hmm. and so that House bill is not going to even get a vote.
Right. But what it means is that you have people like Congressman Amadei who was saying, hey, maybe we should slow down and figure out what's in this and what makes sense, taking a vote saying it's okay to, you know, make it harder for the 18,000 patients who come to Planned Parenthood every year to get their health care. And Nevada has a huge shortage of providers, and we see very few of the folks who need that safety net family planning. And even though Congressman Amadei is committed to access to health care for people in rural Nevada especially, he's willing to say, but on women's health care, you know, it's not that important.
Okay, so speaking on behalf of Congressman Amadei, who is not here, I think that he would say, first of all, that he knew darn well that that vote was going nowhere as far as the Senate was concerned, and he headed up the Trump campaign in Nevada, and he's on the Republican team.
And I would say I understand the politics of it, and I also understand, you know, when you're in the Nevada legislature, it's pretty easy to take votes if you know they're not going anywhere. But this is really directly a slap in the face to not only women, but all Nevadans. If you're going to vote for this thing, even if you think it's not going to go forward, it is moving, you know, the ball down the field, and you know, it's moving towards taking away the protections of the Affordable Care Act, like protecting folks with pre-existing conditions.
Well, one of the things that's very interesting about this is that we really, at this point, have no idea what's going to come out of the Senate. Mm-hmm. And at this point, there are so many Republican senators on border states who are starting to push back against the president, others who are running for re-election that feel that the Trump administration so far has been so extreme, that they are pulling away as well. So I think it's hard to judge what, and I obviously you represent Planned Parenthood. There's no reason for you not to come on this program and make your points very well known. But at the same time, there's a lot of moving parts right now, and they're not all necessarily going in the president's direction.
Oh, absolutely. This proposal is incredibly unpopular with Americans and certainly Nevadans.
Now, you did a poll on this. Who did the poll?
Right. PPP did the poll, and this is very unpopular in Nevada. So 51% of voters in Nevada oppose the Republican health plan. Only 32% support it. 60% of Nevadans oppose the efforts to defund Planned Parenthood. And so I think this is my real concern and my real disappointment with Congressman Amadei. Here you were. I mean, that thing only passed by, what, two votes. You were in this position of incredible leverage, and you could have made a huge difference. And the leadership is desperate to pass this thing. You could have negotiated for any number of things. And instead, he had one thing that he was concerned about, which was keeping people on the Medicaid expansion, which they sort of checked that box for him. But it's very unrealistic if you know about Nevada's healthcare landscape. There's a lot of back and forth. People go qualify for Medicaid. They may get a temporary job and no longer qualify, and then they lose that job and they go back on. It didn't really address Nevada's problems.
You know, it's also interesting to note, and I'll just it's not my job to defend Congressman Amadei.
No, it's fine.
He's more than
I'm a huge fan. I really like him, and I just wish he had done a lot more on this particular issue.
But you know, it's interesting. Obamacare has now become an entitlement, and after this many years, people are loath to get rid of entitlements, and I think politicians on both sides of the aisle are going to have a lot of difficulty coming up with something that is completely different from Obamacare. It just doesn't seem likely. We've got about 15, 20 seconds left. The clinics that closed down in rural Nevada, how did that come about? And that was under the Obama administration.
The Yes. So we've been the Title X funds, which fund family planning specifically, and by that we mean birth control. That grant has been eroding. The state lost 80% of the money for rural Nevada, so 7 of the 13 rural health centers were completely defunded. And that's just been, it's been a target for the Republicans for a long time, even though President Nixon started the program because
right,
it's good for health.
But it did go away under the Obama administration.
Yes, but it was Republicans in Congress cutting that budget.
All right, and that's where we got to leave it. Lisa Cafferata, we will have many more of these discussions.
Thanks.
You. We'll be right back.
After the elimination of solar net metering in 2015, more than 2,000 workers were forced to find solar installation jobs in other states. Now, we have a chance to help put Nevadans back to work. Assembly Bill 405 would send a signal that Nevada is open for business. Don't let the clock run out on solar jobs. Visit yeson405.com. Paid for by the Alliance for Solar Choice.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
On our next broadcast, the Nevada State Treasurer, Dan Schwartz, will join us. We'll see you then.